your host, Jeff Ragavan, and welcome to the Alchemy Podcast, where we're on a quest to explore the intersection of cannabis, compliance, and creative in the marketing world today and beyond. Welcome back to Alchemy. Today I'm joined with Alex Rowland, co-founder and CEO of Nootropic. Alex, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate the time.
Alex, you've got a great background in cannabis, and was checking a little bit of your history out, and you were the co-founder of Ensemble, which really works with a lot of upcoming cannabis brands to accelerate their growth through capital. And you were also the CEO of ANP Holdings, which is a diversified investment management company focusing on software, blockchain, of course, cannabis. So, great background. And obviously, you know, you're the CEO of Nootropic. Talk to us a little bit about the company and talk to us a little bit about, you know, why the manufacturing space.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. I think, you know, the best way to really answer that question is to go a little bit into my history and how I got here.
Sure.
I feel like I'm a relative neophyte to cannabis. You know, I started in the business in 2015, and depending on who you talk to, that's either a long time or not much time at all. So, you know, I'd been looking at the space for some time, and, you know, really around 2015, as I started taking a closer look at cannabis, you know, one of the things I felt was always missing from the space was really a regulatory framework that you could hang a business model on. And that really changed with the passage of MRCRSA. I started spending a lot of time really in late 2015 and all through 2016 with different cannabis operators trying to understand the space better. I mean, my understanding was, you know, about as rudimentary as any other consumer, right? You get cannabis in a bag and that was pretty much it. But going through that understanding that, you know, you're going to have with Prop 64 really an explosion in the number of legal consumers consume the product, and you're going to have this regulatory process in place, that my gut was the state was going to take a very hard stance in terms of regulating the actual production of cannabis products, that just simply putting cannabis in a Ziploc bag was not going to be sufficient anymore. And in all those travels over the course of that year, the one thing I really came away from that experience was that the diversity of processed cannabis products was exploding, right? You're seeing all these concentrates from the market, but also all this evolution around edibles, tinctures, topicals, all these different form factors. And that's really where a lot of the brands were getting built. But the state of the art in manufacturing in the state was dismal. I mean, it was still people's personal kitchens or a garage or a converted shed. I mean, no joke. These were literally the places that they were making these products. And I was like, something has to change very fundamentally, because the regulators are not going to look at this as a viable way to produce high quality, compliant, safe products for consumers. Right. So I looked at it and said, it's going to look much more like the kind of broader federal CPG market, and the manufacturing is going to be a critical component of that. So in late 2016, decided to jump into the market, focus specifically on manufacturing products for people. We initially toyed with the idea and actually went out under Prop 215 and started producing some concentrates under the Nootropic brand, but very quickly, literally within weeks, decided that it was going to be very difficult to do both those things at the same time for a lot of the same reasons why we've designed this contract manufacturing model the way we have, is that it's very, very difficult to build a brand at the same time as you're building a robust supply chain to deliver products to retailers. So we had a fork in the road, and we decided between those two different options, we were going to be best served and we could best serve the market by going into contract manufacturing. So Nootropic is, it's a long way of saying, Nootropic is a contract manufacturer, right? So we don't produce products under our own brands. We only produce products for third parties. We don't want to compete with our clients. And we do that end to end, from sourcing of material. We do things like packaging flower and making pre-rolls, or we'll extract the oil out of the plant using typically either a light hydrocarbon, a BHO, or ethanol to get to a concentrate. And either we're packaging that product then directly as a consumer product, or we're then infusing that into other products, whether it's again, an execution like a vape cart, or making a topical or a tincture or an edible or a beverage, what have you, and taking that all the way down to a tested compliant product, palleted and ready to ship to retailer. So we handle that entire process for our clients.
I mean, just out of curiosity, I know you and your co-founder, Nelson, spent quite a bit of time, prior to starting Nootropic, really, studying the industry, understanding everything from manufacturing to growing to consumer products, and even, compliance and regulatory around advertising and media. But I'm curious, though, with your background and, what was it that kind of first sparked your interest in getting into cannabis in the first place?
I mean, listen, I think for me, it's very rare. I mean, I've been starting companies since the mid-90s, and it's very rare to find what I think is amazing market opportunity for the capitalist side of me, where I think I can make money, and blend that with something that I feel like is really a social justice issue that appeases the, the altruist in me. So, I feel like this is, for me, the ideal combination of things. I mean, I feel like we have waged a failed war on drugs for decades that's cost tens of billions of dollars and lots of people their lives. And we've done tragic things to minority communities in the course of waging that war that I feel like we're finally starting to wake up to the damage we've done there. So I looked at that and I said, this is, to me, part of what this is about. And part of the reason, frankly, we chose manufacturing is it's really from a compliance and safety standpoint where the rubber hits the road. It's where regulators are going to look. And it's really where you can ensure the product is safe and dosed correctly and is going to get to the consumer in a way that is safe and compliant. And if we're going to have broader legalization efforts around drugs, not just cannabis, but psilocybin and some of these other drugs are coming down the pipeline, manufacturing those products in a safe and compliant fashion in a way that consumers can feel and regulators can feel confident that they're getting the right product is absolutely paramount to this actually working. And I think a lot of people complain about, the level of regulation, level of scrutiny around the market, get used to it. It's only going to get tighter. And I think that's a good thing. So I feel like it's, a lot of it for me was being in a position that I feel like we could help the overall impression of the industry and make sure we show people what the legalization process can do and how it can be done effectively and safely in such a way that consumers and regulators can feel safe about it.
Totally. So, we've had a ton of guests on the show ranging from founders and CEOs at, large MSOs to, all the way down to the SSOs. And, the last, I'd say, few months have been obviously challenging for everybody, one part, with the pandemic, and now it's almost like we're dealing with a whole set of new, challenges in the space, especially this past week. So I'm just curious from the manufacturing side, like, have you guys seen anything, maybe abnormal, if you will, as far as, production? I know you guys have a big facility in Santa Rosa that you guys opened in the last year. But I'm just curious, like, have you guys seen an increase? I know that a lot of the MSOs, as, kind of shelter in place was first going into effect with the pandemic, like, they couldn't keep stuff off the shelves because people were freaked out that they weren't going to be able to get their products. And that kind of leveled off a little bit. And people have still seen spikes that they haven't seen, since they've started in the cannabis space. So I'm just curious on your end, like, we're seeing it on the retail and dispensary side, but have there been increases on your side as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're tightly correlated, right? As consumption at the retail channel goes up, we got to manufacture more product. I'd say it's tough for us to tell exactly what this impact is because we are mostly onboarding brand new clients right now. So we're growing very rapidly and hiring people and going through all that process. But we don't, we can't look at our year-over-year numbers because we weren't manufacturing last year. So it's tough for us to know exactly how it's impacted our business. But I would say that it's certainly, cannabis is proving to be surprisingly inelastic as a product, right? People are consuming this kind of regardless of what the financial situation is. We'll see how durable that is as we, get further into this crisis. But in general, I think that, the biggest challenge we have is people are consuming more cannabis, but they are going to become more price conscious. And I think that's going to put increasing pressure on legal licensed cannabis operators who are naturally, given the taxes and the compliance costs, are going to have to sell product at a higher price than people can get it from illicit dealers. So I think you're going to see more pressure where if you add up the cumulative sales of black market and legal operators, I think that number is getting very big, very fast off of a very big base. It's really going to be the component of legal sales in the final analysis and how much legal operators are picking up of that. And I've heard different opinions either way as to how that's going to shake out. But I would generally say that, I think I heard something from BDS or maybe his headset saying, we've seen 78% year-over-year growth in cannabis consumption. It is changing in its composition. More and more people are gravitating towards edibles, beverages, and actually vape carts are coming back very strongly right now because these are more clandestine ways, frankly, of consuming product. You got a lot of people with kids in the house.
It's such an interesting data point, right? It's like parents are home with their kids and they can't smoke, so they're just going to do an edible.
Exactly, right? So I think that's, you're seeing edibles, and vape carts participate in an outsized way in growth and consumption. But we're, at least on the flower side, people are still consuming a lot of flower. So it's surprisingly recession resilient. I don't see that's going to change. There was a bit of a, explosion of demand in mid-March as people kind of stocked up feeling like they were going to have to get through a long period of time without dispensaries. But, delivery services obviously are getting very popular. And I think frankly, delivery makes a lot of sense in cannabis because it's the way most people got it in the illegal market, right? They didn't go to stores. They got it from some bike messenger or something. So I think, that methodology, that way of delivering cannabis to consumers is going to become, again, a dominant form of retail sales. And I don't see people shifting back. I mean, this is going to go on for some time and delivery is just going to be, a substantial component of the market.
Totally. So I'm curious, with your background, obviously, being over at, Ensemble, you've obviously worked with a ton of cannabis companies and really helping them grow and take them to the next level. And I'm just curious, for a lot of the folks that are tuning into the show, we have the cannabis sector in particular it's a great community that we've built with this. And I know that a lot of people are always looking for information and tidbits. So I'm just curious from you, are there any things for the folks that are listening in that might have just launched a cannabis brand? Like what are maybe the top three things that, they need to be successful? What do they need to do?
Well, first of all, welcome to the party. It's a very interesting time if you're launching a product right now, obviously. But I'd also say it's a relatively good time to do that. I think one of the most important things to realize in launching a brand, I think, is about focus. A lot of brands have come over from the old Prop 215 days, or these are people who have been in the market for some time, and launching a brand has been just a natural component of, they've got a farm, they've been selling a lot of flower. Well, they think they can get better prices by putting in a jar and putting their specific brand label on it. So I think you've got kind of the old guard of brands that are really dominating the market today. But what I'm starting to see definitely a lot of is brand new companies come in focusing on building a brand in the space. And these are typically people who have more CPG experience and brand positioning experience. They might be cannabis consumers, but they're looking at this from a very traditional way of how do you launch a CPG brand into a complex market like this and scale it. Mm-hmm. And if you look at those companies, the one thing I think is definitely predominant is they're looking at more of like an asset-like model to get into the market. Building compliant manufacturing facilities, distribution, all these things in cannabis is enormously expensive and time-consuming. I know I just went through it for the last 3 years, right? And it's not something, you want to spend the next 2 years doing that kind of brain damage just to get a brand launched. So I think pretty much from here on out, every brand is going to be relying on some sort of manufacturer. So, obviously one of the things you want to do is focus on finding someone who has, you know, a great platform to manufacture products with. But past that, now a lot of it's about focus. You know, who are you approaching the market? What is the price point you're going after? And one of the things that is very apparent in this market right now, given the expense of legal product versus illegal products, that there's a real cluster of activity around the lowest price points because people are trying to give, you know, these value buyers an easy exit out of the black market into the legal market, and they're grinding costs down to get those prices somewhat competitive. So, and so you really have to look very tightly at the market. I would say literally 80% of the consumers in cannabis right now look at price as one of their top two or three factors, and sometimes it's all three, right? They're very focused on how much does it cost and what is the potency of the product. Now, that's the consumer today, right? They're looking at how much THC basically can I buy in what format for my $40 or $60 or whatever they're spending at their trip to the dispensary. And a lot of brands have gotten a lot of scale by catering to that specific demographic and that kind of value proposition. And I think part of it is driven also by the retail channel, and the retailers have been less focused on how do we build and work with brands to really fully express that brand and hit a demographic in a certain way and everything else. All that stuff, it really has been put aside, and most of the focus is on, I need this specific type of product in this price category in, you know, in sativa, and whoever can fill that specific spot on the shelf will get that spot on the shelf. And there's not a ton of brand loyalty at the retail channel either. So if you're looking to come into California as a brand, the number one thing I'd say is don't outsource your sales function to a distributor and then cross your fingers and say it'll be all good. You know, I hear a lot of people about, you know, we're just going to license a brand to operators on the ground and they'll go ahead and take my product and scale it. I think that's a very, very difficult way to execute with market. You've got a very sophisticated set of consumers here that have been consuming cannabis for a long period of time. They're very picky. They're very value conscious. But until you get on the ground, go into dispensaries, talk to the bud tenders, and more importantly, talk to the consumers and have that level of contact, I don't think you can really hit that market successfully. And I think you don't really know how to evolve your product to meet those market requirements. So the most important thing I'd say is don't look at building your own manufacturing facilities and distribution hubs and all that stuff. Get out of that. And it's also efficient from a tax perspective. Focus on sales and marketing. And how do you resonate with the consumer base you're trying to hit, the specific demographic you're trying to hit? And that involves you getting on the ground and doing the hard work of going to retailers and talking to customers and figuring out what they really want to see. Because a lot of times I think that's going to be very surprising. And it's also something that I think is, frankly, in a way, easier to do right now. There's only 700 dispensaries in the entire state of California. You can hit a lot of dispensaries and get a lot of direct market data by doing that. And I think it's really worthwhile to develop those relationships on the ground.
Makes a lot of sense. So I just have kind of one last question for you, just as far as supply chain. So kind of looking at the cannabis supply chain space, like how does that differ, or how is it comparable to, let's just say, consumer packaged goods on the traditional side, or, you know, food and beverage? Like, how is all of that, like, this is your space. So I was just curious, like, how they all differ.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of similarities in terms of how product is actually executed on the grounds in a manufacturing facility like ours. You know, we try to comply with those same types of, you know, CGMP standards, and, you know, how do you ensure, again, safety and compliance in the product? What is different here is that, you know, this is a federally illegal drug, and it's tightly controlled by the states that have legalized it. So in California, for example, as a manufacturer, we actually, to be fully compliant, we own all of the inventory. And we actually sell that inventory to the retailer. So in most other, like, contract manufacturing relationships, if you hire someone like us to make the product, you'd simply give us the specifications. We'd make the product and we'd give it back to you, you know, sell it back to you, right, at a certain price point, and that would be the end of the relationship. Here, we have to be much more tightly integrated because we're controlling the entire supply chain all the way down to the billing relationship at the end of that chain, right? So we've got to procure the material. We've got to process it, extract it, infuse it, package it, test it, you know, get it out there. All that activity has to be controlled by us, and the brand actually is legally unable to even touch that product anywhere in that supply chain. So in many ways, it's, like I said, a lot of that process is very similar. A lot of the economics and how involved the brands are in the actual fulfillment is just very different given the state and local rights.
Cool. Good insight. So Alex, if you'd listened to the show before, you know, we kind of talk a little bit about business in the beginning, and then we kind of top off the show with some quick fire questions. You ready?
Yep.
Super easy. Favorite ice cream flavor?
Mint chocolate chip cookie.
That sounds really good right now, actually. Favorite number?
9.
Have you ever worn socks with sandals?
No.
What's the best age?
Right now.
How would you describe the ocean to a person who's blind?
Fast.
If you were given an all-expense paid trip to Cleveland, would you take it?
Of course.
Yeah, Cleveland could be a fun place, right?
Yeah.
Well, Alex, listen, you know, I appreciate you coming on the show and, you know, giving lots of great insight on the manufacturing side and, you know, really appreciate it. And I think, you know, kind of might be going out for some mint chocolate chip ice cream right now.
I love it. Jeff, I really appreciate the time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
This episode of the Alchemy Podcast was brought to you by Philo. Thanks for tuning in. And if you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and share.